Listen.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
That's right. This is the Next Fan Up podcast, the podcast by the fans, for the fans. And I am your Kansas City Chiefs Superfan, Nick. We are actually in sort of the football season now, finally. We
have feels some, good.
Yeah. And that is, by the way, that is our Raiders Superfan, my nemesis, Monty, who you can hear there. Not waiting for his cue, of course. How's it going, Monty?
It's going great. It's going great. It's a good time of year. I love August.
Indeed. It's still a time when everybody feels like their team is invincible and Super Bowl bound, but, you know, and we have some sort of football to watch. And, you know, anything you see in a preseason game that's negative, you can sort of just blow off as being like, ah, well, that's a preseason game. And anything that's positive, you can say, hey, this is a sign that the team is now a juggernaut.
That's right.
So that makes it fun for everybody. We're also joined here by our Buffalo Bills superfan, Robert. How's it going, Robert?
Doing all right. Looking forward to the first football game of the season today. It officially makes Sunday day drinking socially acceptable. So I'm very happy about that.
Yep, there you go. So, as you can tell, as we're talking, by the time you're listening to this, you will have already watched or heard about the Hall of Fame game. We are recording just before it, so all we can say about it is that hopefully no one got injured, and I imagine it was pretty ugly in the fourth quarter, considering that I don't think either starting quarterback is expected to take any snaps in this game, but... hey, it's football.
Favre was lobbying to try to get in a couple series. He said he was going to talk to Coach McCarthy, see if he could get in there a little bit. So we'll see how persuasive he is.
Wouldn't that be just like Favre to unretire right after going into the Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's like, you know, whatever the backup situation for Dallas is, I mean, it can't be too much worse with Favre in there. I mean, might as well. Although I suppose, I'm not sure if anybody's ever done that. Do they take you out of the hall if you become an active player again? I don't know. I'm not sure how that works.
I don't know how the five-year waiting period works for something like that, but, you know, if anyone was going to challenge that policy, it would probably be number four.
Yep, and Proposition 4 might be in effect once again, to give you a little throwback reference there. Well... So what we're going to be talking about today is we're going to be looking at a bunch of fantasy sleepers. As we know, folks out there are beginning to do your draft, and a lot of people are going to be auto-drafting or snake-drafting, looking at the top guys, and, you know, and there's going to be high competition for that top 10. And then it always, obviously, it gets a little bit foggy as you go on. And you know, if you're like me and you're a very, very novice a fantasy guy who doesn't take it super seriously but kind of wants to have a few players from your team on it, we're going to be talking a bit about how to help you find, you know, even if your team is not necessarily you know, an offensive powerhouse, how you can get a player on there that's going to be useful for you and not just be a token homer, you know, selection there. So but first we got to get to the news from around the league. And first up is that unfortunately we have had our first few serious camp injuries. Neither of these have been like totally confirmed, but there are reports that the Bears center, Hronis Gresou, has suffered a torn ACL. He suffered it on the practice on Saturday, and that would mean that he would be out for the entire season. Our own Bears super fan Tom, he wrote in and said that you know, I mean, it really is a bit of a shame. I mean, the Bears offensive line was not expected to really be a great unit, but they are hoping that at least they brought in enough pieces that there'd be some competition here and there, and maybe there are some hopes that it'd be better than it was last year. But this means it's, you know, it may be in a very similar state, which is unfortunate for that team, a team that I think is actually one that we on Next Fan Up have a lot of disagreements about. There's some people very high on them, some people very low on them.
I think they've got a lot of work to do, and an injury like this isn't going to help them. I mean, John Fox is kind of conservative anyway, so you'd expect him to lean heavily on, you know, a lot of run calls, and losing your starting center is just going to be an uphill battle for a team that, you know, if you're from a fantasy perspective or even just from an NFL perspective, there aren't that many big names left on that team other than maybe Alshon Jeffrey. And with Forte out of the picture and they got trying to get their running game going again or reinvented, it's got to be a pretty big blow.
The one thing I remember in the offseason, they released Matt Slauson, and everyone kind of looked at it as a weird move. He was a great kind of play guard or center. I bet they kind of wish they had that move, had that back, to have someone with that type of experience that could go. He'd be a perfect plug and play to fill in for their center.
Yeah, I mean, according to Pro Football Talk, I mean, they're maybe trying some different things here. I mean, granted, like you said, you know, they cut Matt Slauson and then Manny Ramirez, who had been sort of a veteran stalwart for them, he retired this summer as well. It looks like, I mean, Ted Larson is their backup at center, but they apparently are maybe even thinking about putting their rookie Cody Whitehair in there at that spot. Although, you know, the kind of interior offensive line, there's, you have a little bit of time in training camp where you can move some of those around. But moving on, there the one other big injury that's happened since the last pod, and again, we don't have, I don't think, firm confirmation of how serious this is, but Lions tight end Eric Ebron has suffered an Achilles injury, and it's pretty rare that there's an Achilles injury that gets you carted off the field that is not a tear, basically. Obviously, you know, there's always hope that it's something a little bit less serious, but Achilleses are, I mean, it's much harder to come back from than an ACL. And for a guy who's really been, really has disappointed based on his draft stock and what they're looking to get out of him in that offense, you kind of wonder, too, if, I mean, this might be all she wrote for Eric Ebron, as sad as it is to say.
Yeah, he's definitely got a long road to come back, Achilles. It sucks to hear someone go down. Everyone was very optimistic about the chances for Eric Ebron going into this season. With Megatron retiring, all those targets are going to be up for grabs. Most of the stuff that I've been reading as I'm getting ready for various fantasy drafts, a lot of people had Eric Ebron pegged as like a fantasy sleeper, just assuming just from his size alone he'd be a red zone option.
Well, so that then moves us over to the Bills, and I wanted to run by you, Robert, a couple of little transactions that happened with the Bills, and that Brandon Spikes has re-signed for a one-year deal. I'm curious to know what you think he has left, and also, I mean, I'm not sure if he did anything for you guys, but I'm always interested that, so Javier Arenas was also released from the Bills, and he was a Chiefs second-round pick in 2010. Famously because he was the second round pick that we got for trading away Tony Gonzalez, thinking that Tony G was only going to have like one more good year. And he wound on to have like three more Pro Bowls and was, you know, a huge, huge cog in the Falcons offense for 3 to 4 years after that. And all we got was a so-so cornerback who we is now bounced around, is on his like fourth or fifth team. So anyways, what are your thoughts on these moves?
I figured once we signed Reggie Bush a couple days ago. The intent with that was he was going to become the primary punt kickoff return guy. Once that happened, I think it kind of made Javier expendable because really, you know, they didn't bring him in to be a cornerback. They brought him in for special teams. And, you know, they gave Reggie Bush, I think the deal, including incentives, is right around $3 million. You know, that's obviously the guy they want doing the kickoff and the punt return. And so I think his days were numbered once that happened. The linebacker position for the Bills, I don't know if you caught this, but Reggie Ragland, our second-round pick, had a non-contact injury. I believe it was yesterday in camp. So that's a big worry for everyone. The Bills actually signed two linebackers today. They signed him. They also signed Brandon Spikes. They also signed David Hawthorne, who is familiar with the Rob Ryan scheme from his days in New Orleans. I think a lot of it, more so than just obviously the Ragland injury, the first MRI was inconclusive. So there's probably be something announced tomorrow. But I think it's more there were three inside linebackers that were injured. They actually released one of the injured guys today to make room for Hawthorne. Spikes, he's a real good run stuffer, or at least he was when he played with us two years ago, which was the last professional football that he played. I really hope they don't have any visions of him in pass coverage, because I remember instances of him being hot garbage when it came to that. So let him play on first down, and that's probably about it.
You know, I was really, really very much a fan of what the Bills did in the draft, particularly for, you know, for the Ryans' scheme. But, you know, now a lot of those young guys are all beat up. I mean, what is your expectation, or how have your expectations changed, really, from like draft day to now in terms of what this defense is going to look like?
I mean, it's definitely changed as far in a negative way, because obviously the anticipation was Raglan was going to be on the field in that weak inside linebacker spot, you know, and, you know, the thought was he was going to play well. Now, there hasn't been an announcement on exactly what the injury was, but it was non-contact, and they brought two linebackers in today. So, as you know, reading the tea leaves, it's probably a pretty big issue. Hopefully, you know, it's not for the whole year, but it very well could be. At the outside linebacker position, you go from Shaq Lawson, a guy who, you know, I was excited when the Bills drafted him where they did. I thought he'd be go somewhere between that 10 to 13 area. And you're replacing him right now, who IK and Kampali is getting the starting reps, who is a shell of what the position was after the draft with Shaq Lawson. So, I mean, there's two potentially big downgrades at a spot where we were pretty terrible at the year before. So the worry for me is that it's going to be the same as last year, where we had a, you know, pretty subpar defense. And, you know, the hope this year was with the two rookies, we would, you know, start to turn the corner and things would be pretty good. But, you know, it just feels like it's going to kind of mirror last year a little bit more than maybe, you know, a Buffalo Bills fan would like.
Any feeling from you that since they brought in IK, correct me if I'm wrong, he's the guy who punched Geno Smith's face and broke his jaw. Yes. It's just some bad karma. Like, both your draft picks are now kind of going to start off on the pup list. Just maybe you got to jettison the negativity of the jawbreaker, and maybe things will start picking up for your squad.
No, I'm fine with that. He's definitely not starting material. The Bills actually, a couple days ago, had undrafted free agent Eric Stryker in that position. And from what I read, I don't live in the area anymore. I haven't seen a practice or anything. But from what I read, he did well, better than IK as far as coverage. And he's kind of a natural pass rusher. He's just a very short, diminutive rusher. So there are concerns about that, I guess. But I have no problem, you know, sending him on his way. Fine, go for it.
Just so long as you guys can get it up when you have to play the Patriots twice here, I'd like to see you guys steal a game or two from the Patriots. I think the whole NFL would rejoice.
Oh, yeah, Buffalo would as well. I lived in Boston for a while, so it's always fun being on the good side of those emails as opposed to getting all those emails from Pink Hat Nation tearing me down.
You have defensive concerns. It appears that the Dolphins have offensive concerns. I just wanted to bring this up because I saw this story that that the new Dolphins coach, Adam Gase, he's willing to be outspoken, apparently. We haven't heard much from him because he's been a coordinator always, but apparently they did a full-on defense versus offense scrimmage down in Miami or wherever they have their training camp, and the offense was just absolutely dominated by the defense, to the point that Gase came out and really and really openly criticized their effort. He said that that offense, there was just no juice whatsoever. It was almost like a walkthrough. And he said, it irritates me. You get to practice one time a day, and you get a limited amount of practices, and how many times you get to be in pads. I think that it's like 22 practices, padded practices for the whole year. To not take advantage of it, that's bothersome. I think when you get smacked in the mouth, you have to have guys step up. Not all the time is it going to be vocally, but somebody's got to either make a play, or we've got to stop the defensive line from penetrating. We've got to pop a run. We've got to complete the ball. Something. And so, I mean, I don't know, I just found it interesting that Gase is talking like, you know, like a coach that just got blown out 40-0 or something, and it was just watching the team practice. But, you know, there's been concerns going back a couple of regimes with this team of how much fire Ryan Tannehill really has, how much he's really taken charge. Either it's the players, or, I mean, everyone's assumed it's been the coaches, but it's just, it's interesting. It's not a great look here. But, Robert, it's your division rival. What are your thoughts on the Dolphins right now?
If I had to speculate, I would honestly think it had more to do with the players than the coach, only because, you know, I mean, their last coach, I mean, he was an offensive coach. So you would think that, you know, they would have a little something. Even now, their current coach is an offensive guy. It's funny with Tannehill. You know, you say, you know, he doesn't get fired up. I think the most fired up he's gotten, or at least, you know, as far as I've seen, and I, you know, don't watch a ton of Dolphins. I mean, I pay attention to it, but not like the Bills and stuff. The most fired up I've seen is probably when Miko Grimes came out in the media and started destroying him, which is, you know, kind of a silly thing to get upset about. And so, you know, so I think that, you know, Gase had, I thought in Chicago, I thought they had a very productive offense, and it was more than just the guys you'd expect producing. I thought Langford played very well last year. So I think it's a very player-friendly offense, and if they're not, you know, motivated by being involved in a, you know, player-friendly offense, then that's troubling.
Well, I mean, it's a brand-new coach, too, so, I mean, if I was a fan of the Dolphins, that's exactly the kind of stuff I'd want to hear my coach saying. Kind of, you know, call out some people, call them out publicly if that's what it takes. I mean, it's time to step up. It's time to go. If you can't get motivated to go out and play in August, I mean, it's kind of now or never. You don't get too many chances to be a head coach in the NFL without winning. And if you don't like what you're seeing out on the field, you're going to have to do whatever it takes to get those guys going.
And one of the little things that came up was that both Larry Fitzgerald and Carson Palmer got extensions with the Arizona Cardinals. And Carson Palmer is 38 years old, and he got another year tacked onto his deal, worth a little over $24 million, which is, you know, that's a nice little extra year there. You know, I'm curious for your guys' thoughts on this. Mine are that I've kind of looked at the Cardinals as they have a pretty, pretty narrow window here because of the age of both of those guys. Granted, the team is loaded all over the rest of the place, but I mean, I feel like it was the same thing when they made it to the Super Bowl last time with Kurt Warner. Basically, I mean, the stars of the team, a lot of them are the same from that year, and yet, you know, it took them a couple, it took them a while before they found another quarterback that could get them back there. And so here's that window again, and he is not young. So I don't know if even extending him necessarily keeps that window open any further, but what do you guys think?
Yeah, so in the NFL, I never know when they extend a contract what that means. I mean, can they cut him tomorrow, and will that cost them anything against the cap? I don't know. Sometimes it seems like they'll extend a player so that they can convert some of his salary into signing bonus money, and it counts less against the cap than it would have. So, I mean, until you had someone break down what all the numbers mean, you know, it's kind of like a non-issue. You know, they're just moving money around their spreadsheet to try to make sure they've got enough to sign free agents if they need to. But in my opinion, the RG3s and Sam Bradfords of the world have got an open interview or open put their skills on showcase, because that'd be the prime landing spot once Carson does finally hang them up.
Yeah, I think with both deals, I mean, you'll really know. Larry Fitzgerald is retiring a Cardinal, so you know, no matter, add a year here, add a year there. I mean, they're going to keep him around no matter what. Carson Palmer, I mean, I don't know. I didn't look on any of the cap websites to see, like, if it saved them a couple bucks as far as the cap this year or next year or something of that sort. So, I mean, until there's a sharp decline with Carson, you know, he's going to be the guy in Arizona. That is a real fun spot for anyone. Yeah, like you said, RG3 or Sam Bradford, who are potential impact free agents over the next year or two at the quarterback position. I think Arizona would be a real fun landing spot for someone like that because they have ready-made weapons at every position on offense, and they have an offensive coach who's very aggressive. So I think, I mean, the signing, you know, the extensions are really, you know, more so of, you know, either just saving money, whether it's this year or next year, or, you know, maybe a little bit for the culture of the locker room. There's not, you know, I mean, I think Fitzgerald's there for the long till he's ready to hang him up, and Carson is there until he has a sharp decline.
All right, well, let's turn this over to fantasy. We know that that a lot of you actually care a little bit more about your fantasy teams than your real teams, and you know, and people are all over the map when it comes to that. So, you know, taking it from a fan perspective to the fantasy teams, the USA Today, they put out a list of some of these top fantasy sleepers, and a lot of them are pretty interesting, and I know we have thoughts on our own teams, but I just want to run through these first, just because a few of them I found sort of intriguing. And the first one is on your squad there, Monty. It is running back DeAndre Washington. And basically, the case that they're making is that among running backs with at least 150 touches in 2015, Latavius Murray was apparently ranked as the seventh least efficient, I guess, in terms of breaking tackles and I guess, you know, overall averages and things like that. Whereas Washington can bring in, you know, a lot of catching ability and can be a really serviceable third down back, they think, anyway. So I'm curious what your thoughts are on this guy, Monty.
Yeah, I think even in a standard 10-team league, his name is getting thrown out there as a potential sleeper, and it makes sense. So the Raiders definitely were trying to get somebody else to help contribute to the running game other than just Latavius Murray, the second leading rusher. Our second leading rushing attempts for the Raiders last year is actually Derek Carr. The Roy Helu experiment didn't turn out, so they cut him either this week or last week. And Washington can catch. So, I mean, it just makes sense that he'll be able to come in on, like, third downs and help, you know, in PPR leagues or help out in just even standard leagues. If Latavius Murray goes down, I think Washington's going to get every opportunity to be the running back. With any rookie, to me, that was kind of how much can you afford to give up that roster spot while you're waiting for him to kind of get acclimated to the league. I don't know much about, I think he came from Texas Tech. I don't know if he was asked to block a lot when he was in there, but obviously in the NFL, you're not going to be able to see the field if you can't pick up a blitz, or block for the franchise quarterback. So I think Washington is definitely somebody to keep on your radar, especially in a PPR leagues, definitely in deeper leagues. The last few weeks, his average draft position has been kind of climbing as more and more people are talking about it. But if you've heard me or followed me and Neil's Twitter conversations, I am a big fan of the Raiders' offensive line. I like what they're doing out there. I think that Nick could probably get a couple yards running behind that offensive line. So DeAndre Washington coming out, even if it's just to spell the Tay train or to come in for injury, I think he's definitely a name to keep on your radar. He's going to have a lot of opportunity. Jack Del Rio, if you remember his days back in Jacksonville, I mean, he's not the most aggressive dude you're ever going to meet where you're going to just put five wide receivers on the field and go. He does want to run, and like Fred Taylor and MJD definitely both had some fantasy football value in their heyday, but neither of those two guys had a quarterback as good as Derek Carr or an offensive line as good as what the Raiders have put together on paper. So we'll see how it goes, but I definitely understand why his name is creeping up. He's going to have a lot of opportunity.
Well, my usual hesitation with third down backs is how many touches are they really going to get per game? And if, you know, again, like you said, if you're going to put them on your roster or even as like sort of a flex occasional option, I think usually for me, the one thing that sort of breaks that conversation one direction or the other is how much usage they get in the red zone. I mean, if this guy becomes a red zone option and if we see them, you know, chucking it to him on the goal line and things like that, then I definitely would be willing to take the spill. But yeah, third down backs are always sort of difficult to evaluate as options in fantasy, I find.
I've had a couple of drafts already thus far, and my assumption was I'd be able to get Washington just as my standard fill up one of your last spots on the bench as a handcuff to Latavius Murray, and he's actually gone a round or two earlier than I thought he was going to go. So whether the hype train is, you know, as with all of Oakland, it seems this offseason is a little bit more than what is deserved. We'll have to wait and see, but I was definitely kind of surprised at how early he's going off the board, given exactly what you said. I mean, even if he does take over and is the primary third down back, I don't know how much fantasy goodness you can expect from a third down guy, because I think if it's first and goal from the one, they're still going to give it to Latavius Murray.
All right, well, the next guy on this list is Dorial Green-Beckham, the wide receiver out of Tennessee. And, you know, there weren't a whole lot of players that really shined on the Tennessee Titans last year in fantasy, or in real life, frankly. And this guy has been sort of a famous knucklehead going back to his college days. I think he's also an interesting case because I think a lot of people wanted to, you know, sort of just give up on him. I mean, he had 32 receptions last year and four touchdowns. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, for his frame, for the fact that he has the look of a number one receiver, he was definitely not producing last year. But, you know, because he was a little rough around the edges and he was dealing with a rookie quarterback and Marcus Mariota last year, maybe they've developed some better trust now. And I think Mariota's actually a guy who's been climbing up draft boards as well. What are your thoughts on either of these guys, Robert?
Dorial Beckham Green, I like a little bit. Not as much as I think some people do. I think he kind of came on a little bit at the end of the last year. He had a nice game against Jacksonville in week 13, 5 for 119 and a touchdown. And then in New England, 2 weeks later, 6 for 113. So he started to kind of become a bigger target towards the end of the year as he kind of acclimated himself to the offense. The only thing is, and I know that in the USA Today article, they make a little bit of mention about Tajay Sharpe. Tajay Sharpe is running with the ones, and he ran with the ones at the OTAs, and he ran with the ones kind of from the get-go at camp. And there's been nothing but, I mean, people are just saying good things. They've been saying good things the entire time. Actually, I believe today in the Tennessean, there was an article about how he's been, every time he's on the field, he's producing. So I like Dorial Beckham Green as far as talent. I mean, he was, he was a monster at Missouri when he played. Obviously, he had issues in college and then before he was drafted, which led to him kind of getting picked, I believe, in the second round. But I feel like Tajay Sharpe might end up starting ahead of him. And if that's the case, he's not going to get as much opportunity, that kind of sleeper pick as, some other players might.
Yeah, the next two on this list are, well, one is a rookie and one is essentially a rookie, in that we have Sterling Shepard, the rookie in the New York Giants. And for me, I don't really view him as a sleeper. I view him because I wanted the Chiefs to draft him. I have a feeling he's going to really explode. I mean, apparently he's been tearing it up in camp. And it doesn't surprise me. I mean, he was a guy who I felt like, if you watched his tape, he was perhaps the most talented wide receiver in the draft. He just didn't have the size or the particular skill set to be a number one. I mean, he could be the best slot receiver in the NFL. based on just his skill set. So I'm not surprised to see him actually going high, and I wouldn't really consider him a sleeper. But the other one on here is Devontae Parker, who, due to injury, is essentially a rookie this year. And, you know, sort of we were talking about with the Dolphins' offense, that's just sort of, it's always had, you know, it's had a lot of weapons over the last few years. It's always been a little bit anemic. Maybe his return, and if he gets going, that is what jumpstarts them. What are your thoughts, given that, well, I guess it's one AFC team, one NFC team, but Monty, I'll throw this one to you.
Yeah, I think Sterling Shepard has got, you know, he'll be in the conversation for Offensive Rookie of the Year, you know, depending on how the two quarterbacks do, but that's just a perfect situation. Odell Beckham is going to dominate any defense's attention, and he's going to be able to go in. Is it McAdoo? Is that the name of the Giants coach?
Yeah.
He's going to be able to just slip in there, and a dude that quick, he's going to have a great year. I know Eli's a little bit older, but that offense has kind of got that short passing game. I just think that was a perfect situation for him. And, yeah, he wouldn't fit on a sleeper unless you are playing with a bunch of folks who are playing for the very first time, because that dude should be going drafted ahead of a lot of the names, in the league. As far as Devontae Parker goes, I during the draft, I thought he was a bit of a reach when the Dolphins went for him, and then he ended up getting hurt, so nothing really came up from last year. I don't remember him very much, and now he's back. That team, I mean, with a new coach, you just never really know what a player's going to look like, and I hope for their sake that they're good, but I don't know much about Devontae Parker. Him and Doriel Green Beckham, there's just, you know, I'm kind of the mindset that I avoid teams that I don't have any confidence are going to win. Like, I'm not a big believer in the Dolphins. If they went 4-12, it would not shock me. Same with the Titans. And unless I was really desperate or had some injuries or was trying to fill in some bye weeks, those are players that I would tend to avoid in fantasy.
Well, you would have missed out on a lot of fantasy beasts on the Jacksonville Jaguars this last year if that was your policy.
That's true. That's fair.
Well, and speaking of guys that are, you know, well, you know, the next guy on this list is another rookie. And he's another one of the situations where I can see the case, but, I mean, this is a true deep sleeper, in my opinion. And that is running back Josh Ferguson with the Indianapolis Colts. He's an undrafted rookie from Illinois. So, I mean, really off the radar here. But owner Jim Irsay has talked him up. Chuck Pagano, the coach as well, has also said that he could be a good change of pace guy. But, I mean, on the depth chart, officially, he is behind both Frank Gore as the starter, the presumed starter, and Robert Turbin, another veteran who's, you know, a fairly solid option there at running back. So he's another guy who I think, it would make sense for him to be maybe a third down back in the system, or maybe if they start, giving Gore a bit more of a pitch count, given that he's now 33 years old. He may come into play a little bit more, but I think this guy, you know, may be great for Dynasty, but I would, for a redraft, he seems like a little bit too diamond in the roughy for me.
I agree. I mean, I get, the offensive situation in Indianapolis is potentially, awesome. So, and the running back that's, starting is 33 years old. So I think people's perception is that, there's a strong possibility for an injury or what forth with Frank Gore. But, I mean, at the end of the day, he was, Josh Ferguson, he wasn't even drafted. He wasn't drafted for a reason. I mean, there's a reason why 32 teams didn't pick him through seven rounds plus all the the supplement picks. I think that, the situation with the team is good, but he needs a lot of good things to happen in order to put himself in a spot to benefit from that type of offense. Gore is going to be the bell cow unless he gets injured or unless he's fallen off a couple steps between last year and this year. But I believe, Frank Gore is he's notorious for his workout and keeping in good shape. So I don't know if that's necessarily, something that you could bank on. And even if that were to happen, you still have Turbin, who's not the best back in the world, obviously, but I vaguely remember him playing in Seattle and being not great, but decent. If he's behind, if he's, he needs basically like three things to happen in order for him to go into, you know, a good spot. So I think, you know, in looking for these sleepers, you're kind, you're trying to hit a home run. And I think the most that you can hope for with Josh Ferguson is like a solid single.
So the next sleeper here is wide receiver Quentin Patton on the San Francisco 49ers. Although he's slotted to be the number two, they seem to be, you know, fairly high on the fact that he's going to get some opportunities here. And, I mean, and again, there's some factors here that I think, you know, really play in his favor just in case, just in terms of being a decent sleeper. And really, it's just the fact that I have a feeling that basically everyone's going to be ignoring the 49ers largely for any type of offensive pickups, given that, you know, they don't know who's going to be their quarterback, and it's either going to be, you know, Colin Kaepernick or, you know, the real American. And so, you know, so Quentin Patton, and as a number two, but I can get it, because if you think Torrey Smith, he's going to get all the deep stuff, and they're going to use him to stretch the field. Quentin Patton, you know, he's more quick than fast, although he has some speed as well. He might be able to take a large portion of the underneath stuff, and on a, you know, on an offense that's looking for something to depend on, you know, he may be the more dependable option than Smith is. But I mean, last year, I mean, his production was just 30 receptions, 394 yards, and a touchdown. That might be impressive for a Chiefs wide receiver, but, you know, for a fantasy wide receiver, it's not great.
Lottery ticket. I know if you're pulling the trigger on someone from Chip Kelly's offense out in San Francisco, you could either totally get burned and land on your face, or you could hit the lottery and get someone who's actually going to be a worthwhile start from week to week. So Quinton, I've also heard the name DeAndre Smelter, another wide receiver out in Chip Kelly. So between those two guys and Torrey Smith, I mean, if you had all three of them and had to play one, would you know who to start on any given Sunday? It'd be just, you're throwing darts at the wall, but there's definitely appeal everywhere that Chip Kelly has gone, albeit in college and as well as the Eagles, he's, you know, his offense has produced. So, I mean, depending on how deep your league is or how many roster spots you've got, I could see throwing a dart at the wall and hoping that you get the right name.
Another, I think, maybe the most volatile defensive or special teams pick here they have as their sleeper in that regard, and that is the Jacksonville Jaguars. And, you know, they're interesting. I don't think I would want to spend a draft pick on them as being my number one defense, but I would definitely, you know, I don't know, maybe like late in the draft, they would be a fun one to stow away there, because they're definitely, you know, if their offseason, the greatness that they achieved in their offseason really shows up in the regular season, then this should be a playmaking defense. It you know, so I mean, this is the list of guys that they added, you know, an abridged list. It's defensive end Malik Jackson, free safety Tashaun Gibson, cornerback Jalen Ramsey, linebacker Miles Jack, cornerback Prince Amukamara, defensive lineman, D-end, Bjorn Werner, and they're getting Dante Fowler back at D-end after basically redshirting him because of his injury last year as the top pick. And so they have tons of talent arriving at this defense, and finally coach Gus Bradley has some pieces to work with. For me, the one thing that would make me still hesitant, you know, aside from the fact that this was supposed to be a good defense last year and it wasn't, is the fact that it's an offense that is constantly turning over the ball. It's an offense that that has not been great on in terms of the run game and in terms of just ball control. So I have a feeling this is a defense that's going to be protecting a lot of short fields, and just, you know, when you're doing that, you're going to give up points. Inevitably, and you know, and if the offense can't stay on the field, you know, and really grind out long drives, and they're going to have to be out there for a long time. And some of these guys are, you know, this is a fairly veteran group now with all of these free agent acquisitions. So, but I don't know. Since you're presiding over a big offensive haul yourself, there, Monty, what do you think? How confident are you in the Jacksonville Jaguars defense?
In the Next Fan Up Dynasty League, that's actually the defense that I picked. So depending on your league, right? So every league's a little bit different. Generally, defenses aren't going to score that many points either. You might get a few sacks here or there and a few turnovers, but it's usually not going to be enough to make or break your win or loss for the week. I picked the Jacksonville Jaguars because I like Gus Bradley. I think that what he's building out there, I mean, I don't want to be too optimistic, but it just, you can call him the Seattle Seahawks East. He might not have the Cam Chancellor of the world yet, but boy, the names that you rattled off, he's got a few pieces. And if Jalen Ramsey and Miles Jack can live up to even a portion of the potential that they have, I mean, they're going to be a solid defense for the next few years. That's the kind of defense that I would keep on your radar for like streaming, because you are going to go up against Mariota. I know Andrew Luck is a stud, but he didn't play like it last year, and if he gets banged up, you could stream them in that as well. And then we have yet to see, I'm not a big fan of Brock Osweiler, so I definitely see potential in a fantasy light. Everything that you said is 100% true. Their offense turns over the ball. Their defense is going to play with short fields. And in an NFL setting, that's going to be a lot of pressure to put on your defense. But if you're just hoping for quick pressure on the quarterback that's going to lead him to throw a ball too soon and then your defense to snap up a play and maybe get a pick six, I think that Jaguars have got as good a chance as any, and they're definitely going to be a much cheaper investment than some of the already stalwart defenses. Like if you want to pick the Broncos or the Seahawks, you're going to have to draft them a few rounds earlier than if you're going to want to, you know, roll the dice on an up-and-coming Jacksonville team.
Yeah, and the last one they have here as their sleepers before they get into their sort of honorable mention sort of category is kicker Nick Novak. So if you got to get a kicker, and a lot of them are already gone, they recommend Nick Novak with the Houston Texans. And, you know, there are some things with him that I, you know, just on the face of it, I can see, you know, it's part of my kicker drafting philosophy as well, is if you want to look for a kicker on a team, on an offense that's going to be leaning on the run a lot and that doesn't necessarily have, it's not going to be a super prolific offense. It's an offense that you think is going to be able to move the ball and that, you know, and on a team that maybe has a good defense that therefore, you know, that they're going to be playing in close, or at least they feel that the score is going to be low enough that they're going to be comfortable with just settling for the field goal if they're doing a slow grinding run down the field and don't necessarily want to take the shots to the red zone and just, you know, okay, we'll take a bunch of field goals. And I feel like the Houston Texans are the perfect example of that. I would also
spoken like a true Chiefs fan.
Exactly, that's where I was going with it. Like I've seen Cairo Santos, the Chiefs kicker, you know, fairly low, or at least in the middle of the road on a lot of these lists, which I just don't understand. I mean, a lot of them are going based on just the percentage of completion, and so you have Gostkowski and you have guys that are going to be kicking a ton of, you know, extra points probably and that are, like, extremely accurate. But for me, you know, you want to look at those offenses that don't always get into the end zone. And look, there is no kicker last year that kicked 7 field goals other than Cairo Santos. Chiefs offensive weapon extraordinaire, I'm just saying.
Yeah. I think it's all valid points. I mean, if you're throwing the dice, rolling the dice on a kicker, I mean, if your favorite team, if your kicker's already gone from your favorite team, the Nick Novak and Cairo Santos of the world, hey, why not? How is the kicking situation up in Buffalo, Rob?
We actually, the Bills just released the guy they brought in for camp fodder. So looks like it's Carpenter's job. I guess he's hit, what did I read today, 21 field goals in a row in practice. He had a terrible year last year.
Didn't Coach Ryan get on his case last year? I seem to remember
he was
something.
In the doghouse all season. I think he missed 7 of the PATs from the new distance, missed a couple chip shots. So talk out of camp is that he's got his mojo back, but we'll see. I think if you're drafting a kicker, hopefully you're doing it in the last round or two, and just there's not a lot of there's not a huge difference, you know, once you get through the whole season between, you know, the upper echelon guys and the guys that are kind of in the middle of the pack. So Nick Novak is a name. Their offense could be, you know, a little bit stronger than anticipated. They do have an elite wide receiver. They have a really good running back. You know, he played well in Miami. For whatever reason, they didn't give him a lot of chances. So, you know, they could move the ball. I personally always try to grab a kicker of an offense that scores a lot of points. So, you know, I think it's as good of a lottery ticket at the kicker position as anybody else.
I think the number one goal when you're drafting a kicker is that he makes it through training camp and doesn't get cut. I swear I had a draft maybe last year or the year before. I picked a New Orleans Saints kicker thinking Drew Brees can't get a touchdown every time down and they'll bound to get some field goals, and the dude got cut. So then I'm trying to figure out who the other guy is. And I mean, it was just, if you got a kicker who you feel is going to be on the roster in September, then I'd, you know, pull the trigger.
Exactly.
Yeah, don't draft guys that are going to be cut. That's our other fantasy advice. So on their late-round flyers, I think I'll do these a couple at a time. But so they have Kenny Bell with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who I honestly don't know too much about. But they're saying that he's speedy and could eventually assume Vincent Jackson's role. And Vincent Jackson is getting up there in age. It does make sense that there could be a passing of a torch there. And I have a feeling that that's going to be an offense that's going to really put up some points and yards and stats. Go ahead.
I like wide receivers like that, where you've got two good wide receivers, like a number one and a number two. If either one of those two guys were to get dinged up and miss a game or two, if you've got a wide receiver like that next guy in line who's going to have an opportunity, like if you can find the guy in the New York Jets who could maybe fill in for a game or two when one of those guys goes down, the Tampa Bay guys, I mean, it just seems like a good late round dart throw if you're looking for somebody who isn't going to be on the field, you know, as much as a lot of the big names. But if there were to be a slight injury, you know, a player misses a game or two, someone like that could step in. Plus, you know, garbage time counts, and you know, being the third guy on the field, I think those are the kind of guys to keep an eye on.
The next one is Chris Conley with the Chiefs, and honestly, I overdrafted Chiefs in our own Next Fan Up Dynasty League, and you know, and I'm high on this guy's overall upside, and I like him as a player on the team. He was sort of the workout warrior with like the highest spark scores among wide receivers last year when he was drafted. I think we got him as a third round pick. And look, I mean, it depends on if you're dynasty and if you're, you know, if you're redraft and how many wide receiver and flex slots you have. But frankly, I just think there's the only wide receiver you can really justify from the Chiefs having on your roster is Jeremy Maclin. The only other ones, I mean, it's only if you're assuming that he's going to be injured for a long period of time during the season, is because, look, I mean, Maclin is going to get you some decent stats, but he's the only guy that Alex Smith trusts, and it's a team that just frankly doesn't throw it that much. And so Conley, while he could become very productive in Chiefs terms, is still, you know, like wide receiver four terms for a lot of other teams. So I wouldn't expect, barring a major injury to Maclin, that he's going to be really all that useful to you.
It's fair enough.
And so then the next one here is tight end Vance McDonald with the San Francisco 49ers. We already talked about their number two wide receiver. Might as well talk about their tight end, and probably their tight end too. You know, he's a guy I was sort of targeting in the late rounds of our draft as well, just because he's young. Apparently there's some buzz about him, and it was something that Chip Kelly ended up leaning on a lot in Philadelphia, was throwing a lot to Ertz and getting the tight end a lot of targets. So, I mean, if he can be a reliable target, he's going to get a lot of balls thrown his way in a Chip Kelly offense. So I think this is a pretty smart one.
Yeah, that, and then the quarterback situation, right? I mean, it always seems like to go hand in hand with a young quarterback or a quarterback who's just learning a new system. Either the security blanket is to dump it off to the running back or find a tight end that they get along with. So if the quarterback, whoever that should be, I'm pulling for the real American just for the jokes. But if he and Vance McDonald can get a little rapport going here in training camp and during the preseason, maybe that'll carry through into the regular season.
Yeah, that offense is, the same offense that he ran in Philly was very, you know, there's a lot very tight end centric for a couple years. So I think it's a good spot for if you're looking to kind of take a lottery pick on a tight end towards the end of your draft. You know, Vance, you could do a lot worse than Vance McDonald, because I think at the very least the opportunity, you know, is definitely going to be there, because it's not even like he's competing with a lot of really strong wide receivers on that team for ball. So, I mean, anyone could be, you know, the top guy in that offense, really. So, yeah, I mean, if for a lottery ticket at the tight end position, Vance McDonald is, I think, a good one.
Not to take anything away from the Chip Kelly dartboard, but Adam Schefter just tweeted out they're canceling tonight's Hall of Fame game. Apparently, field conditions are like tar. Players think it's unsafe playing like on concrete, and that is a bit surprising. I've never heard that before in all the years I've been waiting for the NFL to start. I usually end up watching the Hall of Fame game just because it's been so long since I've seen a game.
Oh, wow. So all of our non-predictions for the game that you were attempting to make at the top of the hour, well, yeah, that's we were clearly didn't matter that we were recording right before the game. So is there any news in terms of when it's actually going to be, or has that not come out yet?
Yeah, I don't know how easy it is to reschedule something like that. I mean, both these teams are going to have games next weekend that they're going to want to prepare for. I would just assume they're going to, you know, vehemently apologize to the good people who bought tickets, and maybe Brett Favre will go out there in his Wrangler jeans and throw a couple passes to Marvin Harrison, try to give people something to talk about. But I'd be surprised if they reschedule, just because, I mean, football games are tough to reschedule. It's not like you can do a doubleheader.
Frankly, what you just described sounds a lot more entertaining than the Hall of Fame games normally are. So, yeah, I totally get behind that if that's the direction they choose to go.
Yeah.
Well, so last on this list are a couple of wide receivers, both of which I honestly think are not really, really sleepers, in my opinion. At least they shouldn't be considered sleepers. If these guys are falling deep into your drafts, like, just snatch them up immediately. And that is Sammy Coates with the Pittsburgh Steelers and Jeff Janis with the Packers. Coates, to me, I mean, especially with Martavis Bryant out, like, he seems to be the, you know, the guy who's going to fill in that production. That's on an offense like that. I mean, you take the third receiver is going to be better than the first receiver on a lot of teams, and Jeff Janis, I mean, he also is sort of the heir apparent. Particularly, you know, Jordy Nelson comes back slow. Davante Adams is still sort of unproven. Jeff Janis is the other young guy. I was happy to be able to scoop him up in our dynasty league. So yeah, so if you see these guys in front of you, grab those.
Yeah, definitely everything that you said, 100%. Those guys should be on your radar regardless. Sammy Coates could have a nice year this year.
All right, well, that brings us to our teams, because, you know, part of what we wanted to do here was just sort of talk about, if you are Chiefs fans or Raiders fans or Bills fans out there and you miss on Sammy Watkins or Amari Cooper or one of those guys at the top, and you know, you're deep in the draft and you want at least one homer pick to stash into your roster, what's a guy who might not be highly evaluated and, you know, in terms of the list that you see out there that would be a good pickup? For the Chiefs, you know, like I was just saying, you know, in terms of wide receiver, there's not a lot of guys that are going to get you decent production. But for a super deep flyer on wide receiver, I would just say actually Tyreek Hill has been tearing up the Chiefs camp, and he's a guy, he's like the guy I'm least happy about the potential of rooting for the Chiefs. I mean, I don't know if you listen to our draft recap show, he was a fifth round pick by the Chiefs. He actually just last August pled guilty to domestic battery by strangulation, of both hitting and trying to strangle his pregnant girlfriend. So he is pretty much the scum of the earth. Yeah. The team that took a lot of flack for even drafting him. But the guy is apparently insanely fast, and he's been just outrunning the entire defense and taking bombs from Alex Smith. And as crazy as that sounds, that might actually happen in the regular season. So, you know, he'd be a guy to look out for if you're just, you have like one last pick. Although I understand if you feel dirty picking him, I feel dirty having him on my team. the other guy is, I think Spencer Ware is probably the guy who's going to emerge as the heir apparent for Jamaal Charles. Charles is, he's 29 now. I think he's maybe turning even 30 this year. And he's obviously torn up a couple of knees. He's still going to be extremely productive, and I think he's still the most dynamic option they have. But Spencer Ware, put on a real show last year, and he's the sort of bruising runner that, that gives the Chiefs something that they don't get with Charles. So I think he's going to be the guy long-term that the Chiefs are going to look to. So especially in a dynasty league, like I would look at Spencer Ware. He's also the sort of guy I bet that they give all of their grind-out-the-clock second-half carries to when, you know, if they get a slight lead and just, like, let the defense hold off the other team and grind it out on the ground. That's what the Chiefs like to do, and he's really built to be that guy. So those are my two that I'd be looking out for. What about you, Monty? Who's blown up your camp, and who do you think would be a good sleeper pick for the Raiders?
Well, I am drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit over here. I think that the Raiders' defense is going a little bit lower than the kind of production that they're going to get. And just hear me out before you laugh at me. There was a time when Justin Houston and Tom Bahali were just on the outside wreaking havoc, getting sacks, causing turnovers, and that defense was one of the tops in the fantasy football scoring. I got a feeling that Khalil Mack, obviously everyone knows about, he was good last year, essentially doing it by himself. Bruce Irvin and then the guy that they drafted, Jihad Ward, the veteran offensive linemen are talking about how versatile and how powerful this rookie is. Like that's kind of the buzz in the camp is just this defensive lineman. So if the Raiders can get some pressure on the quarterback with their defensive lineman, I just think their defense is going to get some turnovers and they should be more productive than where they're being drafted now. And then the same thing for Clive Walford, the tight end. He's ranked in a lot of lists that I've seen as I've been going into drafts, like in the 20s. And I think he's got bust-out potential all over him. I think the Raiders are going to actually be more of a running team than a passing team, even with Amari Cooper and Derek Carr. But Clive Walford should be a nice red zone threat. He kind of came out at the end of last year. I think he's going to have a nice little season going into it. And then the only other person that I kind of – you can get for free – keep on your radar for injuries and bye weeks is Seth Roberts. He's a wide receiver who plays in three wide receiver sets. So if Amari Cooper and Crabtree are getting a lot of attention, he's facing the third or fourth cornerback on the defense. He ended up with 5 touchdowns last year. And actually, I read in some website, I wish I could give him credit, that he had more red zone targets than Amari Cooper last year. So obviously, Amari Cooper's the future, but he's just something to keep on the back burner for when you're desperate and it's a bye week and the Raiders are playing against the Chiefs, so you know they're going to put up a lot of points.
All right. Well, and so then, Robert, who's standing out in the Bills? You know, actually, you guys, before the air, you know, before we got on the air, you guys were having an interesting conversation about who the Bills' third receiver even is. But so I'm really curious about, you know, that issue and also, you know, who outside of the obvious on the Bills would be a decent fantasy target?
As far as the wide receivers, I think Marquise Goodwin. It's a third-year guy out of University of Texas. I think he's going to be the one who eventually does win the number three position. Main reason being, I mean, he's a speed guy. When I say he's a speed guy, I mean, he was in the Olympic trials this year. I believe he ran somewhere around like a 4.24. I mean, he's a legit speed guy. And coaches can't help themselves. So I think that he's going to be the guy that they kind of annoyed as number three. If he can avoid the injury bug, and he might be made out of glass, but if he can avoid the injury bug, he, even with EJ Manuel at quarterback 2 years ago, he had a couple beautiful long touchdowns. He can, as they say, take the top off the defense. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I think that, for what he offers as far as making trouble for opposing defensive coordinators as far as game planning, I think he's going to be the number three. And I think that he could do well. It's going to be one of those guys that's feast or famine. He may have a couple weeks where he has a long touchdown or a couple long plays, and another week where he gets a one catch for 9 yards. But, you know, as far as a late round pick, you know, it's fun to kind of roll the dice on someone like that. As the player who I think is going to be, you know, the lottery ticket that might hit, I think, is Jonathan Williams, running back out of Arkansas. He's a rookie this year. He was a fifth round pick. He was injured last year in college, so he didn't play. But the year prior, everyone kind of thought of him as kind of in that second round area for running backs. And I know that the Bills have LeSean McCoy, but last year he got dinged up quite a bit. So the number two running back position in Buffalo was a relevant fantasy football position. Carlos Williams last year had 8 touchdowns, had a couple really good games. Carlos Williams came to camp weighing about 25 pounds overweight, though. He, as Roto World put it, he had dad bod. So he actually hasn't even taken the practice field yet because he can't pass the conditioning tests. The Bills did sign Reggie Bush, but he's going to be primarily a kick returner. And then Mike Gillisley as well. People, if you look at the numbers, he had a great per game average or per rush average, but a lot of that was weighted by a 50 and a 60-yard run. The only game where he got legitimate rub was the New York Jets game, where he had 24 carries for 28 yards. And I think that of the options out there, I think he's going to be able to elevate himself through training camp and get into that number two position. And if he's in that number two position, he is one person getting injured away from being the lead back in the number one rated running offense in the league, as far as last year was concerned. I mean, so they're definitely going to run the ball. I think that a combination of his talent along with the opportunity on this particular team, he's someone that could have a very fruitful year if you're looking for like kind of a later round flyer.
Question for you, Rob. I thought when they signed Reggie Bush, did Jonathan Williams get arrested for something? Is he facing a suspension?
He got arrested for a DUI, but that doesn't it's something that probably isn't going to come up until next year as far as a suspension. I know that I think it was Marcel Darius. It ended up being over a year before he got last year suspended the first game. So it's something that probably isn't – they're not going to throw a suspension his way until next year when at this point he's just accused of it. He hasn't actually been found guilty in a court of law, so the NFL isn't going to suspend him yet. So I think and they had a scrimmage yesterday, and he, from what I read, he was the best-looking back out of the bunch.
Gotcha.
All right. Well, we threw this together at sort of last minute, but we were able to get some other super fans to send us in some notes on a few sleepers for their teams. For Denver, our Denver super fan told us that he would grab Devontae Booker, late in any games or any drafts rather that you're running. He sees him as playing a sort of Charles Sims type of a role, and if CJ struggles or if he goes down, Booker would end up becoming the third down back. He says. I also see the Broncos as being a run-first team, if they have any sense. So I think that's a fairly smart recommendation, although I've seen him going higher and higher in drafts as well. I know I tried to grab him in the late in our draft and realized that actually you, Monty, took him like 100 picks earlier.
Yeah, I draft a lot of people from the AFC West. I figure if they do well, fine, my fantasy team is successful. But if they get hurt and miss time, then the Raiders are good. So it's kind of a win-win either way.
There you go. And Andrew, our Jets superfan, he wrote in that his sleeper would be Jason Morrow. And he lasted way, way deep into our draft. He was a second-round pick in 2014 and showed a lot of promise his rookie year, but he missed all of last year with a shoulder injury, and so he's sort of been off everybody's radar, except for the one moment where he decided to talk some jive with Rex Ryan, I think, through the media. But anyways, he basically could become the Jets' third option in the passing game, and it's going to be a pass-first team. So I think that's a pretty wise pick, and I wish I would have thought of him earlier in our draft.
Totally agree.
And our Saints superfan, Chris, his pick is Mike Thomas. Apparently, he's been the talk of camp. Apparently, he can run the entire route tree and has made a lot of impressive catches. Spiller has looked healthy, but he's skeptical as to how long that's going to last. And he says if you're in a crazy 16-person, 20-round draft, which is us, and you're looking for a player, Tommy Lee Lewis apparently has been making a lot of plays at wide receiver, and he's sort of a gadget player that they... that they've been using, or at least rather they haven't had. And he's going to be a returner, and you know he's going to find some balls thrown his way as well. So there's some Saints players for him. I mean, for me, I feel like Saints always get overdrafted, but it's, you know, it's never that horrible of an idea. You just know that, A, their defense is going to be horrible, so they're going to be throwing it everywhere, and they have Drew Brees. So
it was 5,000 yards receiving available up for grabs for someone.
Yep. And so I'm glad we also got input from a couple of guys representing teams that are not going to be overdrafted in any drafts, and that is our Browns and our Rams superfans. So Jared, our Rams superfan, he wrote in that that Tyler Higbee has apparently been tearing it up in camp. He's getting a lot of looks in the short to intermediate routes and is especially doing well in the red zone. The Rams won't be airing it out with either QB, so he's worth a look in a 10 or more team league if your strategy is to wait and take a tight end in the last 2 to 3 rounds. Farrell Cooper is looking good too, he says, with the wide receiver. He's getting open and showing his run after the catch ability that he had in college. Wide receiver is so deep in fantasy that he isn't worth more than a late round flyer, but in 14 plus team leagues or in dynasty leagues, he's worth taking. And he also cited the other Michael Thomas has been making some deep plays, but is still raw coming out of a small school. So, you know, and his deep, deep, deep fantasy sleeper is Duke Williams, an undrafted free agent. But like he said in there, you know, I wouldn't be taking any Rams wide receiver in anything but the last couple of rounds.
Tavon Austin in a PPR, I mean, they seem to find ways to creatively get him the ball, but I'm kind of intrigued. So they've got Case Keenum, I think, has been named the starter for preseason, whether or not they're going to bring Jared Goff along slowly. But Case Keenum, you know, he's kind of got an open audition for a backup quarterback role across the league, so he might try to push. I'd just be curious to watch what the Rams are doing out there, because you know that Gurley's going to get a lot of attention, so it just seems like that opens it up for some of these wide receivers. You just don't know who it's going to be, so I would take a late-round flyer on some of those guys that Jared mentioned just to kind of see if they pan out. If not, you'll have no problem throwing them back into the waivers to pick up somebody who's, you know, filling in for some injured players.
And for the Browns, our Cleveland Browns superfan Ben, he is still not very high on his own roster in terms of fantasy value. He says basically outside of Barnage, you know, you should only take Browns if you're really, really desperate for something. And even Coleman, you know, their first round pick, he's still a rookie with it's going to be some crappy quarterback throwing to him. And he says their running backs haven't proven anything, but in a PPR league, he says you could do worse than Duke Johnson as an RB2, but expect inconsistencies. So there you go. If you're a Browns fan and you really want somebody other than the Barn Man, there's at least an option for you.
I think Duke Johnson's going to have a nice little year. I know that the Browns are a bit of a hot mess, and everyone thinks they're going to be picking first in the draft next year, and that might be, but Hugh Jackson is a really creative offensive play caller, and I bet you he's going to get more out of the talent that he's got than you would expect. So if you can get those guys late and just stash them, I bet you there'll be weeks when maybe you have to play them because of an injury that they're going to pop, and you'll be glad that you did.
All right, well, this has been a lot of great advice. I mean, I think, you know, there's tons of fantasy shows that are going to give you, you know, some of the, you know, the top people at every position. There's other places that are going to try to give you a little bit of perspective on sleepers. But for us, you know, I think we represent a lot of fan knowledge. We're all guys that are obsessively watching all these training camp reports as fans. And obviously we have the network of the super fans. So if you like what we've been hearing, you should listen to more of us. You can find all of our archives, all of our past shows on a number of places, including blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. You can stream all of that there. You can find us on Facebook by typing Next Fan Up into the search bar there. And in addition to our past shows, we end up posting some of our off-air conversations there and some of our own individual rankings. And when the season begins, and actually already with you know, the Hall of Fame game almost happening, You know, we're going to be posting our super fans, each and every one of us. There's going to be a pregame preview in terms of who they're looking for, what they expect, and a postgame recap of their team. You know, so if you're looking for another fan reaction, and a knowledgeable fan of your team, sort of breaking down what to look for and what we saw, we're going to have that on the Facebook group. Also on Twitter, that's where we do a lot of our engagement with the outside world. We are at NFU Podcast. You can always find some, you can always find our shows and some conversation going on there. Me personally, if you want to shout at me for my my slurred speech or my lack of knowledge about teams that are not the Chiefs, you can find me at Clayton Nicholas. And for you, Monty, by the way, how many beers deep did we get you this on this particular pod?
I held back. I was good tonight. I was going to go grab my third one, but we had kind of gotten to the end of the list, so I figured I would be good, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed for work tomorrow morning. Preseason. It's preseason. Once the regular season goes, I'm ready to go.
You got a pregame for preseason, yeah. But you're warming up. That's fine. I'm sure we're going to be in some truly messy form when it comes to our superfan battles later on this year. I'm looking forward to both of those.
Speaking of superfans, Justin, the Seahawks superfan, did chime in on his team. He said that Russell Wilson poster that went viral, Danger Russ, with him posing in Army Rambo gear, has really caused a rift with the team, and there's really no Seattle Seahawks worth drafting in your fantasy draft this year. You should just steer clear. That poster is just single-handedly that, and then people they started playing Sierra's music in the locker room to get with the goodies. He just said, is there something bad happening out in the Pacific Northwest? You do yourself a favor and stay away.
So, like, that one poster is, like, this, like the equivalent of, like, 10 ACLs.
You got it, and I don't want to mess with that.
Yeah, an interesting twist, if you've heard our past shows, for our own Next Fan Up Dynasty League, the twist was that in our first round, we had to pick somebody from our team. And it was sort of automatic. It was whoever was like the highest drafted person in our team. So, and me and Justin, our Seahawks superfan, you know, we really got, you know, the other end of the stick. And that basically there was nobody in, you know, from our teams in that Dynasty Leagues drafted on average in the top 30. So, I mean, I ended up getting Macklin. He got Tyler Lockett as his first overall pick. First round pick. So if you have to draft Tyler Lockett, otherwise just pick up the defense late in the draft, I suppose. But Robert, if someone wants to find you for some off the air conversation to catch up on the latest of the Bills, or just need somebody to talk some jive with Rex Ryan style, where can they best get in touch with you?
They could find me on Twitter at Buffalo_Sauced.
Is that sauced like sauce?
Yeah, Buffalo_Sauced.
Nice.
Birthplace of the buffalo wings, right?
Yes, sir.
That's right. It's like one of my favorite things in the world. For that, you know.
Since you're on Sunday night podcast and Next Fan Up, I'm going to take the other meaning and assume that you did a little better than me and got a little bit deeper into your beer fridge than I did.
I'll be honest with you. Today was the cheat day for me and the wife on the diet, so I did have a couple wobbly pops before and during the podcast.
Cheers.
Nice.
Amen.
All right. Well, this is already getting sloppy, so we're going to go ahead and leave it there until next time. But I believe there you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.